Hello and welcome to Viewpoints. My name is Boris Chassaigne. I'll be with you for the next half hour. On today's show, seniors in Revelstoke and Quadra Island, BC get a helping hand from grassroots initiatives.
Nearly half of the population is 60 or older. We're trying to create a network of contractors, volunteers, and other organizations to make sure that we can ensure that they get the help they need.
The Dartmouth Travel Lodge Hotel was transformed, providing 65 new permanent housing options for the homeless.
Homelessness crisis is one that is affecting so many people, and it is not a choice to be living on the street, but rather a result of systemic issues that we have as a society.
The 2SLGBTQ plus community has been targeted by vandals in Liverpool, Nova Scotia. Hateful graffiti was sprayed on a visitor information center, and the community is calling for action. And the Sackville Memorial Hospital is getting closer to bringing back its 24/7 emergency department, but it still needs more new staff before it gets the green light.
This all comes to fruition. We really do want to see that local people or local voices get to be heard in the future governance of Horizon and then a voice at the boards that make any decisions for the future.
These stories and more on Viewpoints.
Follow us on Twitter at CanadaLJI. Listen to all our news online at canada-info.ca.
Nice to have you with us. We start things off in British Columbia, where a new program is underway on Quadra Island. The Seniors Emergency Preparedness Program on the island, launched at the end of November 2022 through the Quadra Circle organization, helps seniors cope with extreme weather year-round. The kind of help available ranges from snow shoveling, firewood delivery, and clearing debris during the winter, to supplying seniors with large containers of water or fans in extreme summer heat. Anyone 55 or older can receive help. The program is fairly recent and is funded through a $25,000 grant from the United Way. Coordinator Mike Ladish discusses the program and services available with Craig Osoba on Cortes Island, BC.
Hopefully going to help seniors who may be more vulnerable and during extreme weather. And it's a program through Quadra Circle that was given some funding by United Way back in at the end of November. So we just started up and it's a work in progress right
now. Okay, and when you say help during extreme weather, what does that help look like?
It can be anything from just a phone check-in or helping with snow removal, not in a major way, but like if a senior needs to get out to a medical appointment and the roads are safe and we can help them get out of their driveway, that would be one way, or to have a contractor come in and clear their driveway so that a home care worker can get in for the appointment. If there's a strong wind and branches are down, we're hoping we can get a local contractor to help them remove branches. And we're also planning to have some equipment like heaters or fans if it's a heat wave in the summer, and small items that can help a person get through a cold spell or a heat wave.
Okay, and say when the power goes out, does that include help with water and heat?
It can. Part of this is helping seniors be prepared too. So we're hoping through education and contact with people that may need help that we can encourage them to have a stock of water, like 5-gallon jugs for emergency situations, and thinking ahead and being prepared so that somebody isn't having to drive out to their house with 5 gallons of water in a desperate situation, but rather be prepared ahead of time.
What do you estimate? I believe this is for anybody who's over age 55. And what do you estimate the numbers are of potential clients you could have on Quadra there, Mike?
That's a tough question to answer easily, but we do know that nearly half of the population is 60 or older. Through promotion, through our website, and through interviews like this, we're hoping to ensure that seniors who may need help, so that we know that they do need the help and that we can get people. We're trying to create a network of contractors, volunteers, and other organizations to make sure that we do record all of the seniors and that need help and that we can ensure that they get the help they need. We're talking about extreme weather, but we're not limiting this sort of help to extreme weather. If a senior is in a situation where they feel stressed. It may not be extremely cold, but it may be just below freezing or around freezing, and they're having trouble keeping warm or coping or feeling safe, then they certainly are eligible for help through the program as well.
So how do they go about getting in touch with you and registering to be on the list, Mike?
Okay, we have a page on the QuadraCircle website, and quadracircle.ca. That's fairly easy to remember.
Do you have a rough idea of what the population is of Quadra, the total population, how many residents there are?
From what I know, there are about 3,000, let's say, give or take, and say half of those are seniors. And a lot of people are, say, senior age, and they're perfectly capable and independent. And we, during the first snowfall, we had contact with a couple of seniors who said, I've been independent and looked after myself quite well up until this year, and all of a sudden, oh, I think I do need help. Hopefully they'll know that they can reach out for that help. And one thing that I've noticed in the month that I've been doing this is that the neighborhoods generally are self-sufficient in many ways. Neighbors look after neighbors. And so the program isn't going to replace that kind of neighborliness. It's what it's hoping to do is ensure that those networks carry on and that people feel that there is somebody out there who is making sure that everybody's looked after.
It sounds like a really important initiative, and I'm really grateful for having you speak with me today.
Welcome, Greg.
Greg Osoba, Cortez Island.
And in the eastern part of British Columbia, a grassroots unofficial network called Revelstoke Unstuck caters to similar needs and more. The network, launched in 2020 by Sandra Gregory, is now working hand-in-hand with the Better at Home initiative. Revelstoke Unstuck is now a network of 15 dedicated volunteers who give a helping hand to some 40 seniors. About 20% of Revelstoke's population is senior citizens, many of whom live independently. And the Better at Home program, funded by the BC government and the United Way, is facilitated by Deborah Hogan at the Community Connections. Better at Home offers rides, light housekeeping, friendly visits, and some group activities like coffee socials. They have 40 clients and only 7 volunteers. Journalist Megan Dooling met up with Deborah Hogan from Revelstoke Unstuck and Erin McLaughlin from Community Connections.
My name is Deborah Hogan, and I'm the Better at Home coordinator for Revelstoke.
Hi, I'm Erin McLaughlin, and I'm the co-director of Community Outreach and Development.
We do different group activities that everybody seems to look forward to each week, and it's been super helpful for them around their house doing different stuff with the friendly visitors. Same with the housekeeping. It allows them to feel good about remaining in their home.
Recently, Deb started a group on Thursday mornings that's a coffee time. This is an opportunity for lots of seniors to be able to come and connect and have coffee and socialize, and it's so busy.
To maybe myself or somebody else, you know, meeting up for a coffee, going for a drive might seem very trivial to us, but to somebody who is quite isolated, you know, it's a huge thing. It creates a sense of community for them, somewhere where they belong, where they're wanted, they're valued. And so I think it's huge that we're able to do that and connect with different volunteers and have them look forward to something. With the 40 people that I support, I've seen their quality of life improve, whether it's social outings or feeling more independent in their home or capable because they have the snow removal or they have the light housekeeping or lawn care, right? The program seems to enhance people's well-being.
It can be such a huge point of connection. It made me think of the reports we received during the pandemic and people coming to the food bank during the pandemic. And even though, you know, the lineup was still super spaced out, everybody was 6 feet apart, there were opportunities for people to connect and talk outside. That wasn't happening. And for lots of folks that came, they're like, this is the only time during the week that I get to come and talk to somebody. And so I just think of that. I think of that when I think of the seniors, and it might be the only time during the week that they connect with somebody. You know, coming to have coffee at Community Connections might be their only outing for that week.
Hi, I'm Pamela Hassan in Smithers, BC, and you are listening to Viewpoints.
We We turn to Halifax, Nova Scotia, where the Dartmouth Travel Lodge Hotel has been transformed into housing for the homeless. The building, now renamed as the Overlook, will provide 65 new permanent supportive housing options for vulnerable Nova Scotians living on the streets, but also services to help them stay housed. It's going to be a 24/7 operation with nurse-led personnel care workers. There will be a dispensary and addiction specialist and housing support, says North End Community Health Center CEO Marie-France Leblanc. Reporter Sarah Gouda, based in Halifax, Nova Scotia, explains that the initiative was funded by the Affordable Housing Association of Nova Scotia and the Department of Community Services. The federal government and the Halifax Regional Municipality invested $6.5 million into the project, while the province provided $3.5 million, and it will also cover the 1.9 annual operating costs. More with Sarah Gouda, who talks with North End Community Health Center CEO Marie-France Leblanc.
It's not a hotel, it's an apartment complex. What we've done is we've turned all of the rooms into apartments, either bachelor's or one bedrooms, but part of the units will be used for palliative care and step down units as well.
Why the name The Overlook?
It overlooks the city. So it's got a wonderful, wonderful view. I mean, another person has also mentioned that, you know, it is going to house people that have traditionally been overlooked.
And how did you receive funding to change this hotel into apartments for people in need?
Well, it's a partnership. The Affordable Housing Association of Nova Scotia actually purchased the building using funds from both the federal, municipal and provincial governments through the Rapid Housing Initiative, as well as through money from the province. And we are receiving funds from the province to actually run the program. So construction has ended. We're just awaiting our occupancy permit, which may come today. And then we'll start to move in people. And it'll be a phased approach because, you know, moving in 60 people all at once to a brand new facility with a brand new program would not necessarily be the prudent approach. So we'll be moving people in over the next few weeks.
What are some of the challenges that you had putting this together?
Well, it's a brand new program. I mean, there's other models throughout Canada, and we just had to make it our own. You know, construction has not been easy over the last year, so there were some delays in that respect, finding staff and the appropriate staff, and then, you know, building the policies and the procedures and all of that sort of stuff. So I wouldn't say there were challenges, but it was an enormous amount of work.
It's always good to see the province providing more housing, as, you know, housing is one of the biggest problems in Nova Scotia. I was wondering, is there any other housing that's going to be available within the next year? Any other initiatives that you're working on that we can keep an eye out for?
Yes, we're working on several initiatives over the next year, as are many service providers. So there's lots and lots of new housing that is coming on board. Not enough. You know, we have 700 people on the by name list looking for housing, and those are just the ones that we know. But certainly we will have a new building that we're closing on next week, which is just part of our ongoing purchasing housing stock that we can put people that are looking for housing. There's less than a 1% vacancy rate. So we really support those that are either experiencing homelessness or deep poverty. So our affordable housing is really $535 a month. And we're always looking to purchase new buildings so that we can house people that we support. But I know that the government is also working at developing more mobile modular housing and more opportunities. So I think over the next year we will. But again, I don't think 700 persons worth. But the homelessness crisis is one that is affecting so many people. And it is not a choice to be living on the street, but rather a result of systemic issues that we have as a society. So, you know, I encourage everybody to practice compassion and to be aware that this is not a choice.
Hey, I'm Anastasia Avakumova in beautiful British Columbia, and you are tuned to Viewpoints.
The D2S LGBTQ plus community has been targeted by vandals in Liverpool, Nova Scotia. Hateful graffiti was sprayed over the rainbow painted steps at the Visitor Information Center. The local Pride group wants the Liverpool Visitor Information Center vandalism investigated as a hate crime. Liverpool's Mayor Darlene Norman is disappointed. Anyone would deface a symbol of inclusion and welcome with hate. More with Ed Alverson in Liverpool, Nova Scotia.
Horrible that member or members of our community or people within our province or country would publicly display their hatred toward the 2S LGBTQ plus community is simply a sign of hatred. And that is definitely what we are not in our community.
The vandals also etched hateful graffiti in the panes of glass at the VIC. Norman says RCMP have been informed of the vandalism and are investigating. Members of the 2S LGBTQ plus community are calling for more action for instances such as this. Commenting to QCCR, Chair of Lunenburg Pride Steve Ellis says, quote, "These acts of vandalism are disgusting and need to be investigated by the RCMP as a hate crime, full stop. The stairs are a beautiful and shining example of visibility for our community. We at Lunenburg County Pride condemn these acts." He goes on to say, "We will continue to speak out against any hateful actions or words against our community, and this only motivates us to be even louder in our vision of an inclusive space for everyone on the South Shore and beyond." End quote. Mayor Norman says the offending graffiti has already been painted over, and staff are looking into whether the glass can be repaired or will need to be replaced. She is more concerned about the impact this act will have on the community.
We can expend money to put in new windows, replace glass, fix glass, scrub paint, but what we cannot fix is the damage that has been done by people in our community who have seen this or know of it or have been exposed to this.
Norman says the Region of Queens has prioritized diversity, inclusion, and accessibility, and will continue to do so. I'm Ed Halverson.
You're listening to Viewpoints. I'm Boris Hussain. The Sackville Memorial Hospital is trying to bring back its 24/7 emergency department. New Brunswick's Horizon Health Network says it has recruited and onboarded 5 new registered nurses, but there's still more new staff needed before the emergency department can return to a 24/7 service. It needs 2 more RNs and 4 emergency physicians in order to resume a regular hour safely. Former Sackville Mayor John Higham, co-chair of the Rural Health Action Group, spoke with our Sackville journalist Erica Butler. He hopes the efforts deployed will be long-lasting.
I'm really pleased to see that they've taken this step, put the data out there, and committed to collaborating so we can do it, finish it. And from that view alone, but I think, as you know, we think there's more to be done for the longer term, almost like what we're calling collaboration 2.0, other steps that we probably would want to take to ensure that this can, once everything's achieved, that we can continue to not have to fight. We can just work with the health system and work on our health outcomes in this area.
Horizon also gave an update on plans for renovations at the hospital, including construction of a second operating room, renovations to the existing OR, as well as renovations to a section of the ER, which sustained flood damage during Hurricane Fiona in September.
Capital investment, I think, is probably the part that really makes us feel better, that it's real proof that they're going to put money back into the institution itself. That capital shows to us that they're also looking at how rural hospitals can help in the bigger ones. How do we reduce the lines of surgery throughout this province? How do we make them everyday activities in this area? So those are another couple of good signs, I hope, that we can see come to life in the next few months.
Horizon's release includes comments touting the collaborative model of community engagement being used in Sackville and says it is being used as a template for building sustainable rural healthcare opportunities in other New Brunswick communities. Hyam says that in the coming months, there will be a focus on the types of healthcare services needed in the region, as well as ways to enshrine the community's role in managing its own healthcare.
I guess there's a couple of steps, and I guess I did just call them Collaboration 2.0 because it's not stuff that we had initially thought when we were really fighting for the hospital. But now that we're starting to see some of those steps being taken to ensure that that's the case, there is the logical of what are the services going to be within that? What are the clinics that make sense to have in this area? How do they fit in with other clinics in other areas? And beyond that, what do we do throughout the new Tantramar and Strait Shores area in terms of preventative and health clinics, et cetera? And how do they all come together? And what can the community do to help them? We continue to use the Nursing Home Without Walls as an example of how a community helps to deliver better health outcomes in rural areas. And that when we start to do that, and if we're able to bring a network of health services throughout this area tied to Sackville Memorial Hospital, tied to new physicians and nurses and nurse practitioners that we're able to get, and then to the larger provincial system, we should have the opportunity to actually help the province save money because we will be delivering, we hope, better rural health outcomes of where we are already the worst in the country. Maybe now we can actually start to work on that and improve them. The second piece of all this is this, if this all comes to fruition, we really do want to see that local people or local voices get to be heard in the future governance of Horizon and then Vitalité on their side of the equation too. But the board was, as you know, was dismissed, and there is a trustee now who is looking at what some of those options might be for the future. And in our view, that what I saw in the Horizon release today was that they recognize that this is a very positive way in all these rural communities, which I presume means all the rural hospitals that were under siege only a couple of years ago, then they need to have the same sort of community engagement, community commitment, and a work towards getting the people who already do this, getting them coordinated towards better health outcomes in those areas. That is a different type of a delivery of health services. It's with engaged communities, and we need to have a voice at the boards that make any decisions for the future. So that's what I think are the interesting things that may be able to come out of this initial activity that we started with Horizon.
Thanks to Erica Butler for the story. And before we sign off today, a fun story from Ryan Hunt in Edmonton, Alberta, who spoke with Edmonton-born Karen Potts, an Indigenous content creator from Paul Ban First Nation and Alexis Nakota Sioux Nation. Potts was named on TikTok's 2022 Global Discover List. Only one other Canadian is named on the 50-person list featuring people across the globe who are, quote-unquote, driving a positive impact on TikTok and beyond. Potts also combines his love for acting, writing, technology, beauty, comedy, fashion, and advocacy into one persona that his audience of over 290,000 followers hooked. More with Ryan Hunt in Edmonton, Alberta.
Kyron Potts, an Indigenous content creator born in Edmonton and originating from the Paul Ban First Nation and Alexis Nakota Sioux Nation, was named to TikTok's 2022 Global Discover List as not only one of two Canadians to make the 50-person list, but as the only Indigenous creator. Potts says he was pleasantly surprised to hear the news of his nomination.
I really wasn't super familiar with what the creator list was, and then once I found out about the sort of scope of it, I was really shocked and surprised, but also extremely humbled and really proud, I think, of myself, because I recognized that I was the only Indigenous person on the list, and that meant a lot to me. I felt like that nomination was a little bit bigger than me, which was really nice.
To get to this point, Potts says there's a lot of inspirations from his past experiences that have helped him get to where he is now.
I've always really loved performing. I mean, I was in a traditional Métis dance group for 15, 16 years. We performed all across Canada. We went to different big concerts and competitions. And I was also a singer when I was younger. And I used to sing in singing competitions. And I was in drama, always on stage in front of people, trying to entertain, trying to get people to laugh, trying to get people to smile and forget about their stresses. I really think that my love of both technology and my love of performing and entertaining and writing was just such a perfect marriage of all of those things on TikTok. And that really inspired me to start creating the content that I do now, which is like some comedic content and then also a lot of like beauty related things, because I love playing around with makeup and things like that and fashion, and then also doing a lot of like advocacy and speaking about issues that are important to me. That really inspired me so much, and it continues to inspire me. I do what I love, and I love what I do.
With a booming social media presence only looking to grow, Kyron Potts has his sights set on bigger, grander things.
My goals in my personal life and in my career are to be a successful filmmaker. I have aspirations to create 2 or 3 big projects this year, which I'm going to start writing and getting some funding for and start getting the balls rolling on those projects. I've always really wanted to take my content that I make now, which are short films sometimes in themselves, but taking those and really elevating them and taking them to the next level and seeing my work on massive screens around the world. It's a dream of mine, but now that I've kind of got at least half a foot in the door of like whatever industry this is, it's starting to feel like they're a lot more attainable. And so they're more so just goals now. And I'm really doing my best to just run at them with full force. So fingers crossed.
I'm Ryan Hunt.
And this ends this edition of Viewpoints, produced by Local Journalism Initiative and presented by the Community Radio Fund of Canada in collaboration with campus and community radios across the country. Thanks to our journalists today, Craig Osoba, Erica Butler, Sarah Gouda, Ryan Hunt, Ed Alverson, Megan Dooling, and their guests, to Maureen McEwen, our national coordinator, and of course to the artists who help us out with their music. You can listen to all our programs at canada-info.ca. Tune in to all the stories produced by our journalists, posted across the country, stories that pop up every day, not only in English, but also in French, and even a few in Spanish. They allow us to discover Canada and our local communities. My name is Boris Chassin. Stay tuned to your local radio station and the program that follows. Thanks for being with us. Goodbye.